Well, guys, welcome to the Breaking Down Current Affairs podcast. I'm Arjun Ghosh, your host. It's been quite some time since we covered some of the most important events that went down, and the past 2 months were extremely different than what we possibly could have imagined. Well, today we're going to be covering a great number of things that have happened, starting from the current political scenario in the US to the Middle East and how we are continuously seeing dynamics changing day by day. So, first of all, in the beginning of January, the political scenario in the United States was extremely threatening, or at least hopeless, to say the least. Because when we saw that the Georgia Senate runoffs had both Democrats, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, win, the Democratic numbers in the Senate are 50-50 right now. So Kamala Harris, the new vice president, she is a tiebreaker. And so now any kind of important major reforms that President Joe Biden needs to push through the House and the Senate can be done, keeping in mind that all Democrats are unified in their stances. And here is where the Democratic Party needs to be united. It needs to present a united front to ensure that they can hold a majority in the Senate, as we see. And now, then Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is now Senate Minority Leader, as Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is now the Senate Majority Leader. First, speaking about what transpired on 6 January, which is perhaps known to all of you, about the Capitol riots, the fact that President Trump, then President Trump, when addressed an entire crowd of his supporters, who then went and stormed the Capitol building, it was frankly a very dark day for democracy. You know, because America is referred to as the oldest democracy in the world, and other countries, you know, America is, in a way, America wields its foreign policy. It's in a way that it tries to ensure that other countries support the fundamental values, that America can itself be a beacon of those fundamental values. One very important fundamental value being democracy. And on 6 January, amid number of election fraud claims, fake election fraud claims by then President Trump, riot was incited by his supporters, by the Proud Boys, another white supremacist organization. And right now we find the FBI still getting more and more people arresting. Mass arrests have been happening regarding this. And so when on January 6th, President Trump incited an entire crowd to go and hit the Capitol buildings, recordings or even other scenes show, and many of them were going after Democrats. Many of them were looking for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And you know, it just shows the amount of threat which the threat to democracy, to American democracy, as it prevailed. And we and even like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a Democratic congresswoman, even she spoke about how she was also threatened by those very rioters, and many of them seem to have even gotten their help from House Republicans, which clearly shows that the Republican Party and the grand old, or the GOP, has actually, you know, it's gone down the level. Like, we look at, as I said earlier, you look at GOP members like Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, and now you find Donald Trump and his, or as I would say, re-Trumplicans, who have now started this mass polarization movement, and they've just supported white supremacist organizations. They are being now funded by the, they are now being affiliated with the KKK and other racist organizations, and they're supporting white supremacy, racism, and are even tolerating many of former President Trump's election fraud claims. Because, you know, before, so now what happened was, on 6 January, according to the Constitution, American Constitution, the Electoral College comes together to simply certify the election results. And there can be an objection to it, but it needs to be obviously signed by a senator in order to ensure the objection is heard. Now, before the riot began, many Republicans were actually thinking of objecting to the election results, because, you know, after all, not only is their own party leader President Trump, former President Trump, was pushing these election fraud claims, and they just went along with these. Now, the riots, after riots, even still after the riots, there were some Republicans still supporting President Trump. Like, for example, Senate Majority Leader, then Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, obviously, he withdrew his support from Trump and clearly stated that the president incited this mob, that the president incited the riots, and therefore this cannot be tolerated in the country. And that is a big, bold statement right there from one of the most important leaders of the GOP as of now. So, but there have been some like Ted Cruz who haven't learned from the riots and continue to support President, former President Trump's claims and even objected to election results. So obviously, these objections were torn down because there was no fraud in the election. There is no credible proof to prove that. And you know, the one thing which really shocked me was not just the fact that American democracy was threatened for like after such a long time. It was to see the international reactions to it. Now, countries like India, the UK, they supported the fact that democracy needed to ensure there was no stop to democracy in America, that democracy should prevail, and that the transition process should go about peacefully. But like even countries like France, where Emmanuel Macron clearly said that this is what we are seeing today is not America. It's not America because it's not in America's spirit and its values to prevent democracy. Because frankly, what happened on 6th January, or perhaps what's been happening ever since November when the election results were called for Joe Biden, it just sets that it just destroys America's political its own fundamental values as seen by the world. Like Turkey set out to give a rather very mixed statement of sorts, like obviously telling its own people to back out from the riots, to be safe, and so on and so forth. You found countries like Russia, obviously they would be rather retaliatory in the statements. So Russia went on and claimed that, you know, these institutions and democracy in America are flawed, that did not ensure proper democracy. Russia itself frankly did not forgot the hypocrisy of that statement, because Russia itself does not have a proper democracy. Otherwise, maybe, you know, considering what happened with Alexei Navalny, and I come into that in a moment. But you know, we saw even the Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson who came and spoke about how back Nancy Pelosi has once spoken about the Hong Kong protests, the protests against the Hong Kong National Security Bill, and had called them a beautiful sight. So the Chinese government called the capital riots a rather beautiful sight. So, you know, I mean, but things are much different. China clearly does not have any standing to say, to comment on another democracy's own problems, because China itself is not a democracy as a whole. They claim they are, but they aren't, because you find what's happening in Hong Kong is practical crackdown. What happens in China itself, you remember the 1989 Tiananmen Square protest, which also China clamped down upon. Then you find what China is trying to do with other countries like India and Taiwan, which is another big problem as of now. I'll come back to that as well. And so China also, but this was expected, obviously. This is expected. And frankly, considering that the Syrian presidential elections are supposed to be held this year, I am surprised the Syrians did not have a message for the Americans. But what the America did that day was, it was showing a rather bad picture in front of the world. Thankfully, after perhaps a lot of persuasion, Donald Trump finally formally conceded the election by saying a new administration will be coming over, thankfully. So on 20th January, Joe Biden was sworn in as President of the United States and Kamala Harris as Vice President. And then onward, they've begun big new movements to executive orders, like basically the President can take executive action in this case. And it was first, like, he reduced funding for the border wall, which was frankly a border war with Mexico was not that pertinent. Like, yes, it is important. Border security between the US and Mexico has always been an issue because of Mexican cartels and because of the way they keep on trafficking drugs and people through the border. That is an issue, but it didn't require an immense amount of funding, which literally resulted in a government shutdown in 2019. We also have been seeing that he rejoined the Paris Climate Accord, which was a very important advancement in for climate change in the world. And John Kerry has been appointed as the climate envoy for the US government. Now, seeing John Kerry's own record of how he's been able to negotiate with countries regarding the JCPOA, considering he was also in a negotiation for the Paris Climate Agreement, it would seem to say that the United States is doing a good decision by getting him to negotiate with countries for climate change. Like, it would be important to work with countries like Brazil or even countries like India, and in some cases he'll have to work with China as well on these very grounds of the Paris Climate Accord. Another important thing was to ensure that to lift the ban on transgenders entering the army units of the US, which is a big development for the LGBT community, because President Trump, or former President Trump, obviously discriminated against them by not allowing transgenders to enter the army. And Joe Biden had made a very clear point that everyone is equal and everyone deserves a shot. And it has also been noted that since former President Trump was responsible for, you know, inciting the riot on 6 January, he was impeached by the House under the article of impeachment, that is incitement to insurrection. Now, the reason that even now President Trump, having left his office in the White House, is still being impeached in the Senate is because another part of the clauses is not only removed from office, not only removed from his office as president, but also to be removed from holding any public office in the future. And that is also important because we have seen what has happened on January 6th, inciting the riots, clearly means that Donald Trump has earned himself a number of people who believe in fake conspiracy theories, who believe in his false lies and the fake propaganda that he's been spreading. And that's the reason why, if he would hold public office in any capacity, forget being president, let's see any other capacity, it would clearly, he could be a potential threat to national security, as I can possibly comprehend. Because even now, there have been number of QAnon conspiracy theorists who have been like flooding the entire internet. There have been these conspiracy theories going around Twitter and YouTube, and Facebook literally censored Donald Trump and stopped and blocked his entire account permanently. And frankly speaking, yes, it is a crackdown on freedom of speech. Correct. The First Amendment of the US clearly guards freedom of speech. But frankly, even I would want to believe that if a person has incited a riot, a mob, by doing so, there is complete sufficient proof and that has happened, then it is important that this kind of damage and this kind of a person does not get a platform to get to speak. Because, you know, because Donald Trump on Twitter had continuously been peddling these conspiracy theories that the election had been stolen, the Democrats have stolen the election, the fake ballots and whatnot. So, if American democracy was to be valued again, they needed to censor Trump. So it's a bit of an irony. You need democracy by basically silencing someone. That's the irony right there. But it was important. It was required. Now, as we look forward, the US political scenario clearly looks a bit better as of now, because we have an administration that is completely believing in science. Dr. Anthony Fauci said that it was liberating to be able to, you know, bring science into the argument, to be able to get to handle the current COVID-19 crisis, which has been raging through America for a very long time, and it's having a big toll on the UK and other countries as well. Although vaccination drives have begun, there have been certain issues with a couple of vaccines, but there are being efforts made to ensure side effects, etc., are being avoided. So, therefore, it's important to keep hope that COVID-19 can't be eradicated, but we can be vaccinated against it. And that's why believing in science is extremely important. Now, the way in which the US Senate is now divided on a 50-50 basis, with Kamala Harris being the deciding vote, it could possibly help in ensuring that Biden's entire cabinet picks have all passed through the Senate, because after all, Biden's cabinet picks are not only efficient, they are also a very diverse cabinet. So it could be one of the most diverse cabinets in history, and therefore it would also signify that America is now progressing, is again getting back to a more progressive step, to setting an example in the world, and that's also another big achievement. Now, in the next segment, I'll be covering the current updates in the Middle East and what current policy actions the US has taken which could shape the Middle East forever. Thank you. Well, let's now speak about the current scenario in the Middle East. It's been more vulnerable than ever, and we are seeing tensions rising as we speak. So, first of all, let's remember that back last year, the Trump administration was trying to clear arms sales to the UAE, millions of dollars of arms sales, and this could potentially be another reason behind the normalization deal between Israel and the UAE. So obviously I condemn that it was responsible for condemning this arms deal, because it would practically, the UAE would end up using these American weapons in the Yemeni civil war. Now, Joe Biden has already delivered on his promise, and the State Department has halted the arms sales to both the UAE and Saudi Arabia. So a round of applause for them, because frankly, the Yemeni civil war has now reached a tipping scale, because we have seen the humanitarian crisis in Yemen worsen. A couple of weeks ago, a flight consisting of all the cabinet members of the new formed Yemeni government under the Saudi Arabia STC negotiated Riyadh agreement was finally coming to the Aden airport, where again a bomb basically blasted, and people believe that the Houthi rebels are behind this, although the Houthis have not yet claimed responsibility. Now, obviously, we cannot think that the Saudi coalition or the STC would want this agreement to fail. Therefore, none of them can be blamed for this attack. Now, the only reason why the Houthis are being blamed is because they're the only remaining party to the conflict. And frankly, if the Houthis get to polarize the STC and the coalition against each other again, it would frankly work to the advantage of the Houthi rebels. Because, you know, Saudis and the STC, has backing from the UAE, and the UAE is also part of the Saudi coalition. And that would complicate matters between the coalition and the STC, which could work to the Houthis' strategic advantage militarily. Now, at the same time, the United States took a very wise decision to designate the Houthis as a terrorist organization. It frankly was perhaps the most undiplomatic step to take in Middle Eastern diplomacy, because the Houthi rebels are in fact violent. Yes, I completely understand that. But designating them as terror organizations is not going to work at all, because if that happens, it would basically mean that the US, you remember that one lovely sentence which the US continuously reiterates, we do not negotiate with terrorists, and that's the point. If the US does not negotiate with the Houthi rebels, agreements like the Stockholm Agreement, the Hodeidah Agreement, will fail immediately. And they would never have happened in the first place. And although the UN do not need to completely follow guidelines by the US, the UN, only if the UN Security Council deems the Houthis a terror organization, does the UN not have to negotiate with them. So if the US instead does it, it just becomes a bit difficult for the UN to coordinate activities and to ensure that. Now, many lawmakers have actually asked Joe Biden to reverse his decision, and it should be reversed immediately, because if the Houthi rebels, have already condemned this. Now, the Houthi rebels will continue to fight even more in regions like the Hodeidah with the coalition. And if their nowadays designation of them as terror organizations will just polarize them further, because if the US is not able to negotiate with them, there will be no more peace agreements, there will be no joint declaration. And so it is important enough that allies like the UK and France must pressurize the US to immediately prevent this designation from taking place again, because the Houthis are going to get more and more polarized, and it will just result in another cycle of violence. Also, let's remember that back, I had earlier mentioned that, you know, the Syrian presidential elections were coming up. And so with these Syrian presidential elections around the corner, we found the various parties and delegates meet at Geneva for further discussion, and UN Security Council Resolution 2254, which was passed back in 2015, is still currently in implementation, which means that the Constitutional Committee still needs to draft a constitution. Right now, they're simply ensuring that they can get the principles first right to understand how to draft each and every article of the constitution with legal accuracy. And the US has always blamed the Assad regime of having ensure that they can delay the Constitutional Committee workings, because this year's election is going to come up, and that could help Bashar al-Assad in some way if he could block the committee from ever having a constitution for the time being. And but the try of the Astana format have actually, like, Iran, Turkey and Russia have all pledged that they want this election to go properly. They want the Constitutional Committee to work in a more efficient way, and so that there can be a resolution to the Syrian civil war. As of now, we are still not aware of how the entire election is going to play out, because we saw what happened in 2014, where the government held elections in only government-controlled areas, and therefore there has ever since been calls for a UN recognized election. Basically, UN, you know, goes and looks after this election processes, sees that there is no tampering or that there is no problems with the people who are voting or etc. etc. And so considering that Syria right now is not in a very much of a destabilized position, except the humanitarian crisis has been going on for a very long time, it is important right now that the parties of the Astana format, or even the UN Security Council, along with Russia, need to come together to open these humanitarian routes and to allow more humanitarian aid to enter. Moreover, that is important as of now, because the political crisis is being resolved by different delegations, but it is important to get the process efficiently, because frankly it's being stalled as of now. And if the parties can come together in agreement fast enough, if the Syrian government can ensure that there is a proper election which takes place, well and good, because then democracy would prevail in Syria. But the hopes for that just keep decreasing further. However, there is little hope that this year's presidential elections can work properly. And therefore, the Joe Biden administration would have to focus on the Middle East as one of the most important foreign policy goals of this time. Because if these presidential elections are again won in a fraudulent way, in an unconstitutional manner, it could just result in another continuing of a regime which has, you know, attacked its own people, attacked democracy in the region, and the entire cause of the people would then and there be lost. Therefore, when we speak about, you know, the cause of the people, we remember the Arab Spring, the very reason why an entire Syrian civil war, the Yemeni civil war began. And it's been about 10 years since the Arab Spring, and we see today how countries have obviously, that it has gone more into conflict, some have actually come out as a victory sign from the Arab Spring. Countries like Tunisia has done well, countries like Libya, Syria, Yemen, which are now even now raging in conflict. And if this year's presidential elections can work properly for the people in a democratic manner, it would be a huge success for the Arab Spring after 10 years, you know. We also see in Libya as of now a ceasefire being maintained by all the parties. The UN also has asked all the parties to leave Libya in order to ensure that there is a peaceful process, there is a proper humanitarian process in which everything plays out. Because if that doesn't happen, it will only result in more chaos. Because about a couple of weeks ago, a Turkish vessel containing number of arms had been traveling to Libya to provide them to the GNA. And then but then Germany seized the vessel, and there were a number of discussions between the foreign ministries, and it was resolved at the end. Now, one more thing to notice here is that the US ambassador to the UN, the current US ambassador to the UN, stated that it is important that all the parties, the UAE, Turkey and Russia, get out of Libya immediately and let the process play out. So here, you know, there are a number of different divisions between the US and the UAE, as well as the US and Turkey. Now, speaking about the division between US and Turkey, let's remember Joe Biden obviously said that as much as he would love to maintain the strong US-Turkey alliance, he would also keep Erdogan, the President Erdogan, in his watch. And we are obviously aware of how the US imposed sanctions on Turkish defense firms for the S-400 missile defense system deal with Russia, which I'll talk about later. So even the division the US and UAE, with the US blocking arms sales to the UAE and then giving this bold statement on the UAE to leave Libya. And now it is only to see how the US-UAE relationship now comes up during the Joe Biden administration, because they've already begun preventing these arms sales, and then it asked the UAE to leave Libya, which could prove that there are a number of divisions, and frankly it shows that the US is actually respecting fundamental values by telling a dictatorship to back off and to get them from getting any weapons to use in the mini-civil war to kill innocent civilians. Now, when we speak about the Middle East, one very important factor comes into play, that is Iran. And the updates regarding Iran have not been that good. Well, an Iranian nuclear scientist, the one who perhaps led the entire nuclear program of Iran, was assassinated, probably by Israeli officials, and Israel has denied it again, like how Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said it has been tradition for us to deny such claims and we shall deny them accordingly. And you know, it just shows that Israel is trying to delve more into Iran, it's trying to provoke the Iranians, and thanks to the moderate beliefs of President Rouhani, Iran has not yet retaliated in a big way against the Saudis or against Israel yet. But there will come a time when the conservatives again come into the presidency, as the conservatives won the parliament in landslide, and the conservatives might just win the presidency, and that might be a huge blow to not only diplomacy between Iran and Israel, but also between the Iran and the US regarding the JCPOA. Even Secretary of State Anthony Blinken said that the current negotiations would be to enter the nuclear deal, because obviously we are aware that the Iranians have breached number of agreements under the JCPOA, and it is important to first ensure that Iran first gets back into those controlled figures, and to ensure that Iran once again brings its nuclear and its uranium enrichment to a lower level. Now, the Iranian side says that we will do that only if the US drops sanctions immediately. Frankly speaking, the United States should begin dropping sanctions and joining the deal. That's the only way they can at least get Iran to a negotiating table, because the JCPOA, one of its primary flaws, which even I accept from former President Trump's side, it did not address the ballistic missile program or even Iran's help to Hezbollah, Hamas and the Houthi rebels. But what is important here is Iran's nuclear weapons program. And frankly speaking, the way in which the nuclear situation in North Korea is now brewing, it's important that the US and North Korea negotiate a deal. But if the North Koreans see that the US and Iran cannot get on any agreement,
this would set a very dangerous precedent for the North Koreans. So the US and Iran need to get back at the table. That happens only if the US completely drops sanctions. Then they come back to the table, they address their concerns under the JCPOA, and they have to come up with an agreement which is a bit tougher than the JCPOA, because Iran has been successful in enriching a lot of its uranium, and therefore if the JCPOA were to stand any longer, it would actually almost be null and void. Now the arms embargo on Iran being lifted has attracted Russia and China to continue trading weapons with the Iranians, and the US has to address with Iran concerns regarding its ballistic missile program and its help to the Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthi rebels, because with what has been coming out in Palestine as well as in in Yemen as well as Syria, it's important the US and Iran now come to good terms. Now speaking about Palestine right now, the situation in Palestine has been grave, like the humanitarian crisis is prevailing there. There has also been an issue regarding the vaccines, that Israel is not going to provide any vaccines to Palestinians. Now, my belief is that Israel, having annexed most of Palestine, that is almost even occupying the West Bank, Israel has a moral obligation to provide the Palestinians with vaccines, because they are the ones occupying most of the land. It's illegal Israeli settlements in Palestine, which are completely destabilized the situation, and therefore Israel is morally... it's morally obligated to provide the Palestinians with vaccines, because the PLO or any other organization in Palestine is not financially equipped to provide them with all with the most efficient vaccines. Now, speaking about the situation in the US, the Abraham Accords, which have been negotiated by the US, first began with the UAE and Jordan, and now they have also, another Trump administration, before leaving, another achievement of theirs was to negotiate a deal with Morocco to normalize relations with Israel in exchange for the US recognizing Morocco's sovereignty over the Western Sahara. Now, one thing has been that Morocco and Israel being normalizing relations is something which is very much expected to happen. It is another blow to Iran, but Morocco and Israel were anyways in talks to do so. Now, the issue here is the Western Sahara issue. So the Security Council obviously meets monthly to discuss the Western Sahara conflict. It is basically the conflict between Morocco and the Polisario Front, which is backed by Algeria, and they are and now there's a land dispute, basically claiming that the Western Sahara goes to Polisario because of their historical because of the fact that they own it. However, the Morocco says otherwise. Now, the UN has obviously tried mediating the issue, and the Obama administration also mediated in the Western Sahara conflict as well. The UN recognized the Polisario to be the legitimate party there, and the US now recognizing Morocco's sovereignty of the Western Sahara drew condemnation from the Polisario Front, and that would again polarize relations in the Western Sahara between the US and the Polisario Front. Because as much the Moroccans might be important allies of the US, it is also important to keep in good ties with the Polisario Front to prevent any further conflict from raging on in the Western Sahara region. Therefore, the US, having been a mediator, a prime negotiator in this case, it's a big... it is a big blow to diplomacy once again, and it is important that although Joe Biden has in fact supported the Abraham Accords, he at least rolls back this measure of recognizing Morocco's sovereignty of the Western Sahara, because this would only risk polarizing relations in the Western Sahara region, with the Polisario Front already condemning the US for having taken this decision. Now, speaking about how we've come to this very point where we see that relations have been further polarized, Israel has already said that it will now planning to take operational action against Iran, that is proper military action, and this is another big blow, because the US has obviously supported Israel a lot. Even now the US says that it supports Israel, although it will address issues like the illegal settlements and so on and so forth. But the issue primarily here is that if Israel takes any military action against Iran, perhaps President Rouhani, if he falls under public pressure from other ministers in his government, it could possibly result in military confrontation. Not to forget that the conservatives might win the presidency in the Iranian elections this year as well, and this would set another tone for how the relations continue. For example, we've seen Israel has a very efficient military. Even they have an efficient military. Mossad is a very, very reputed spy agency of Israel. And but one thing to consider is, a couple of weeks ago, Iran conducted military exercises with its ballistic missile program, and the accuracy and the way they've been able to pinpoint locations clearly has drawn praise from number of critics. The way in which Iran has continued its accuracy in its weapons clearly shows that even Iran is getting militarily prepared for any kind of confrontation with Israel, and this could possibly mean heightened tensions. In a war, not to mention that a B-52 bomber of the Americans actually flew through the Gulf, and this again threatens the entire stability in the region. Therefore, it is important right now, with these kind of tensions with the Houthi designation, the terrorist organization, and the Syrian civil war coming to a very important point here, where the presidential elections are being held, when a case where Libya right now is also in a big is just trying to get out of crisis and having a referendum this year, and with the tension between Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Iran continuously heightening, the US needs to rethink the way it approaches Israel regarding its illegal settlements in Palestine, regarding its possible confrontation with the Iranians, and the US really needs to rethink how it negotiates with Iran regarding its ballistic missile program, its help to the Houthis, the Hezbollah, and the Hamas, as well as its various obligations under the JCPOA or any other further nuclear agreement which needs to be signed. Now, considering that I spoke about the fact that North Korea was another factor to be playing in this, let's come to North Korea. Now, a week ago, North Korea held a military parade at midnight with the Workers' Party Congress to celebrate Kim Jong-un's new title of chairman of the party, and to see that this very fact that Kim Jong-un has finally gotten to the highest position to his father. It was in fact a big day of pride for him, but one thing which we couldn't obviously evade was the military parade. Now, the military parade held number of weapons, modern weapons which were being used by the North Koreans, the soldiers as strong as the military, as strong as always. As one more advancement that we saw was the perhaps, as North Koreans have claimed, the most powerful weapon in the world, the North Korean SLBM or submarine launched ballistic missile, which has a potential of carrying number of nuclear warheads. And this is a sign to the Joe Biden administration, a possible sign that this could be a time for heightened tensions. And the way in which the US has been not been able to approach Iran yet regarding a nuclear deal could possibly mean that Anthony Blinken needs to really figure out how to deal with North Korea. Because when once Russian President Vladimir Putin, I watched one of his interviews in a news conference, and when he was asked about the North Korean issue, he said very plainly and clearly that, you know, North Koreans have actually seen what's they haven't forgotten Saddam Hussein, they haven't forgotten what happened places where people actually thought of agreeing to the US in these situations. And the fact that the North Koreans are aware of these examples, North Koreans seeing the US not being able to maintain its diplomacy with Iran, it again sets a precedent for North Korea to have a stronger negotiating position, because North Korea is now currently under US sanctions, UN Security Council sanctions. And therefore, it is important that Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, begins negotiating with the North Koreans on this very factor, that this soon start reducing the amount of the nuclear program, because the entire nuclear program, the missile program of North Korea, is not. I believe that the nuclear program of North Korea, or any of its weapons for that reason, is not to just be used for a military confrontation, because that would frankly end to a situation where it comes to the MAD theory, that is mutually assured destruction. Yeah, because if it attacks South Korea, and the US will invade North Korea, it will just result in mutually assured destruction. So I don't believe the North Koreans are not doing this just to perhaps show that you can attack any time. But that's the fact. They are showing that they can attack at any time. And that's a threat. So they're threatening the Americans, the South Koreans, to come to a position where obviously the North Koreans have a much stronger negotiating position, where they have more leverage on these two countries. But whatever be the leverage, it is important right now that in order to prevent any further tensions, to ensure that there's again proper negotiation, the Americans and the North Koreans need to now start meeting. They need to start getting all the details of the programs right, and they need to start negotiating on ensuring that there is no tension in the Korean Peninsula, because this has been happening ever since 1950, and since there were a number of advancements in 2018 regarding particular negotiations between the South Koreans and the North Koreans, they were positive signs. So it is important that even South Korean president works with Kim Jong-un to ensure that there is particular peace maintained in the Korean Peninsula, and that happens with perhaps giving North Korea something that they want in exchange for ensuring that they reduce their nuclear capabilities, that they destroy some of their potential weapons, and not only nuclear, possibly even chemical weapons or even bioweapons that they might have, which is another big problem. Not to mention that even they are financially backed by China. That is another problem, because the US and China have been going through a number of heightened tensions. Anthony Blinken, when he spoke in his committee hearing, he said that one thing he supported Donald Trump for was his approach to China. Not the way he approached China, but the fact that he actually came to China in a hostile way, forming alliances like the Quad and others. And that it is actually important that the US continues with them. But, you know, the fact that China imposed sanctions on Mike Pompeo and a number of US officials even after they left the administration clearly shows that China is no longer messing around. Look at China and Taiwan right now. The Taiwanese president, she actually said that there have been number of reports, there have been number of intrusions by the Chinese military aircraft in Taiwanese airspace, and that shows that China is ready to move forward with military confrontation against Taiwan at any moment. Not to mention the current tensions between China and India, where last year, when they actually began heightened tensions along the line of actual control of the LAC. And now, just a couple of weeks ago, it seems that China has been in fact making villages in Arunachal Pradesh. It even tried to enter into Indian territory via Sikkim. And this clearly is a sign that China is not ready to negotiate with India obviously is negotiating from a point where they need peace. Looking at the way in which China is provoking its neighbors just shows that the People's Republic of China has forgotten diplomacy as a whole in this way. But a very strong negotiating position of China has been the Belt and Road Initiative, a BRI. Now, what is important for India to understand here is that India needs to right now ensure that they can get their regional neighbors to be on their side, like Nepal, Myanmar, Bangladesh, and other such countries, because they need to present a unified front against China. Because frankly, you cannot economically isolate China completely, because you know, in that way you lose access to the entire global market and what and so much. And even a report comes out that foreign trade investments have been in fact the highest in China, and even China might grow exponentially economically, but you see right now that militarily, because you know, obviously China is not going to back down. They didn't back down then, they aren't backing down now. And so India might have to get ready for any kind of possible military confrontation, because of even China and Pakistan's joint military exercise that they have been going on with. Now even the current tensions between Australia and China regarding a picture which was posted by the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson. Then there are also tensions between the US and China because of a US military exercise in the South China Sea, which is claimed by China, but is also claimed by other countries like the Philippines and Vietnam as well. And After what happened regarding the ASEAN trade deal with China, clearly again shows that China is gaining its support and diplomacy throughout the world, whereas it is heightening tensions with its neighbors, India and Taiwan. And then at the same time, other countries are staying silent about it because they are getting economic help from China. Now the US needs to think both from an economic perspective, a military perspective, and a diplomatic perspective. These three perspectives are what can help the US and India to work on together to ensure it can tackle China, and all these three perspectives only. Plus, if you look at how we have been able to see that China actually has been advancing even further in its military program, it will show that it's trying to increase its confrontation with countries like India and Taiwan. The Quad Alliance has been conducting military exercises in the Malabar, and other parts as well, and China has not reacted to this very positively. Now let's speak about a common ally of China and India, Russia. Now, when I heard Sergey Lavrov, Foreign Minister of Russia's statement regarding the LSE tensions between China and India, I couldn't help but laugh, because I really feel bad for Sergey Lavrov and Russia as a whole, because India and Russia have historical ties ever since the Soviets and the Indians worked together in military cooperation, not to mention the Soviets and the Chinese worked together back in the Cold War. And so Russia is in a difficult position here with China and India in tensions, and Russia had to give out a statement because they have to obviously acknowledge what is going on, and they claim that it was a Western tool to divide them, to prevent, to break down relations between them, and Indo-Pacific strategy, which is a way of heightening tensions. Yes, the Indo-Pacific has been a way in which the US and India have been cooperating on. That is one problem of China, but here is the LSE which is coming here. So obviously Russia did not make any statements regarding what intrusions may have happened, may have occurred, or any kind of controversial statement regarding the current LSE issue as a whole. So it clearly, Russia has clearly set a precedent that they will just stay away from this entire conflict as a whole, because Russia doesn't want to hear any of it. On one side you have China, a strong economic and military partner. On the other side you have India, which is Russia's bigger, the highest number of Russian arms are bought by India, be it the ICBMs or nuclear weapons, are all bought from Russia. So Russia and India also have been working together on economic scale as well, and so India also holds certain amount of leverage over Russia. Therefore Russia cannot, at this point where the US, UK and France are now working together to go against Russia completely and are presenting a unified front to do so, Russia cannot lose a number of its allies, and in that way Russia finds itself in a very difficult position. Now remember at the beginning of this episode I told you about the fact that, you know, Russia had been speaking about democracy in America when they don't respect democracy in their own country? Well, we remember about poisoning of Alexei Navalny, who was poisoned. He was taken to Siberia, after which he was taken to Germany, where he was healed, and finally opposition leader Alexei Navalny was able to return to Russia, where he was immediately arrested. And even the Russian authorities and the FSB claimed that they had nothing to do with it, but the CNN, with their investigative journalism, were able to prove that it was basically that the Russians who were responsible behind poisoning Alexei Navalny. And it just shows that Russia right now is trying to silence any voice against Vladimir Putin, and it has failed, because right now we find a number of protests occurring in Russia as we speak, where people are protesting for the release of Alexei Navalny. And this clearly shows that Vladimir Putin is not gaining much support from the people. But we do remember a referendum which clearly establishes Putin as Russia's president in 2060, and this clearly makes Vladimir Putin an authoritarian dictator for another great number of years. So we still have to see how Alexei Navalny, with the help of the West, can somehow try ensuring that democracy prevails in Russia. Although Russia obviously calls him a foreign agent, that he's an agent of the West, and that he cannot be trusted, and that he doesn't deserve to be here. So Vladimir Putin clearly was very, very cold when he spoke about Alexei Navalny in his annual press conference as usual. And it just shows that Russia will continue to do what it has always done, silencing its voices and so on and so forth. But Germany and other countries have been imposing sanctions on Russian officials for the current Navalny poisoning. Russia has stated that it will retaliate with similar sanctions, but nothing completely official yet. Now, speaking about sanctions and also about the previous I told about US imposing sanctions on Turkish defense firms. So Turkey and Russia were able to negotiate a deal to trade an S-400 defense missile system. Now, a missile defense system. The important thing to know about the S-400 is they are surface-to-air missiles, which are extremely efficient, and the Russians were able to manufacture them. And they have been in, and even India has been in negotiating a deal with the Russians to buy, to purchase the S-400s. Now, let's also remember that Turkey is a member of NATO, and since we are aware why NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, was formed back in the Cold War in order to fight against the Soviet Union, which was then a member of the Warsaw Pact. Now Russia tries to fight NATO via the CSTO alliance, which it has formed with certain states. But as we see today, NATO continues to be an organization which takes more, which has been able to accept more and more members from Europe, thus diminishing Russia's influence. But the fact that Turkey in fact traded the S-400 deal with the S-400 missiles with Russia is clearly a moral violation of the obligation. But I would say that what the US is doing by imposing sanctions on Turkey is to violate their sovereignty as a nation. But again, if you look at the US justification, it is also right, because Turkey, if you are a part of the anti-Russia organization, which is NATO, and that is very well open to everybody right there, that it's an anti-Russia organization, it clearly means you can't deal with Russia anymore. And that is what Turkey did not understand, and President Erdogan has been asking that the US cooperate with him on fighting terrorism, that the US not impose sanctions on defense firms, because that was ultimately it would affect the economy as a whole. But you know, Joe Biden obviously said that he would be very skeptical of Erdogan, and he would deal with Erdogan in a proper manner, in a diplomatic manner, but he would be very strict on him as well. So it is considering the US has asked Turkey to move out of Libya, as well as these current tensions regarding the sanctions, it is to only see how the US approaches Turkey regarding this issue of the S-400 missile defense system purchase. The same now regarding India. There have been reports in the US State Department has been thinking of imposing sanctions on India. Now, I would like to first remind the US that India is not a part of NATO. As far as I remember, India does in fact have number of trade agreements with the US, economic agreements, even it has negotiated with the US regarding a 2005 nuclear deal. But frankly speaking, India is not a member of NATO, so there's no moral obligation to anything. India has in fact worked with the US on a number of fronts. So the US wanting to impose sanctions on India for a sovereign purchase of a missile system from Russia clearly shows that the US thinks itself as being the king of the world, which is practically wrong, because the US cannot enforce its own wills and wishes on sovereign countries like India. Now, India negotiating with Russia to get the S-400 missile system is because of the current problems regarding its national security with Pakistan and China, and therefore the US needs to allow this system to continue so that India can purchase those missiles, and there is no repercussion from the US in that way. Even for a Russian embassy, the Russians actually responded to possible reports, them saying that the Russian Federation does not recognize US sanctions, it only recognizes UN Security Council sanctions, and that is the way to move forward. Because if the US imposes sanctions on India, they are risking losing a very important ally in Asia as of now, when the US requires all the help it can have to NATO ensure that China backs off. They cannot right now have countries, allies like India now back off because the US is for no rhyme or reason imposing sanctions on India for making a rather very sovereign decision to purchase missiles from Russia.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Share with your friends and family. And yeah, it was a pretty long episode because we had to cover a lot. And thank you so much for listening to it once again. Share with your friends and family. And feel free to express your opinions and comment on the podcast. Thank you so much. All for now.